Facebook's algorithm needs a history lesson. DeepMind makes robot voices sound more human and sorts through your spy cams. And that free iPhone 7 is not really free, y'all. All that and a whole lot more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1595, recorded Friday, September 9th, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Grasshopper. Stay connected and run your business from your mobile phone with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, visit trygrasshopper.com/twit.
And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we talk about everything that happened in technology today, and you get to do that with us. We are the X and Y of Tech News.
We are the chromosomes of Tech News.
Yes, we are.
I don't even know what that means, but there you go.
Yeah, I am Megan Maroney.
All right, and I'm Jason Howell, also known as Y. Wow, Facebook's in some hot water again.
Yes.
You know that? Involving its moderation of content on the network. This keeps happening. Espen Egil Hanses, he's the editor-in-chief of Norway's largest newspaper, Aftenposten, published a front-page letter to Mark Zuckerberg shaming him for abuse of power in the network's removal of a post by Norwegian writer Tom Egeland. That post actually featured by the Pulitzer Prize winning featured the Pulitzer Prize winning photograph of a naked Vietnamese girl running from a napalm attack, a piece that everyone knows as the terror of war. Norway's Prime Minister Erna Solberg posted the photo to her Facebook wall as a protest to censorship, and it too was removed by Facebook. So it was getting removed all over the place. Ultimately, due to the intense backlash, Facebook says it has re-examined the community standards surrounding the case, determining that the photo does have historical importance, and they've since reinstated the photo. It's really seemed to me, at least on the outset, we don't really know exactly how this process happens. Facebook hasn't, from what I could tell, hasn't said, well, it's fully automated, or, well, it's run by people, you know, and so this was an editorial decision of some sort, even though they claim to not be a media company. So we don't really know the process of this, but if it kept happening to the same photo, I have, and very quickly it seemed like, I have to imagine that this was automated part of the process, and, you know, that they're going to make changes, I think, now so that this particular photo doesn't get denied, but I don't know how that stretches out to others of similar scope.
I don't know. And from what I've read, it seems like the algorithm really is harsher about naked photos of children. Mm. So, you know, maybe like it, you know, it's used to some art and it wouldn't have been so aggressive because, I mean, not only did it take the photo down, then people tried to repost it and then their accounts were suspended.
Suspended for like 24
yeah.
hours.
And so it was very harsh against what is seen not only as art, but history, part of our history. And so you're right. Like, we don't know. I can only assume that it was automated, that someone wasn't just like, oh, let's take that down. But then you see this picture posted everywhere. Even The Guardian, just the thing that we were just showing, it's like it's a video. So the play button is right over her, the naked girl.
Right,
and
right.
So you know, I've seen other places. It's like this is something that we're, you know, we're not, we don't want to see this sort of thing. We want to look away, and that's kind of what Facebook, a lot of what Facebook is like, let's just only see the nice things, let's just only see the pretty things and not see the horrible things. But you know, even in the past year, Zuckerberg has come out and said like we want to be able to change that, we want to favor news, but again, they're like, we're not a media company, but they are, they're making decisions.
Yeah, that's the big challenge, and that's where the confusion comes around. You know, they keep kind of running up against this, like they want to treat themselves as a tools company. But more and more, they're making these decisions that put them in the media company bucket, let's say. Confusion around things like sensitive content versus things like breastfeeding, for example, or real news versus fake news, which mm-hmm. we've heard a lot about. A lot of these things, just like as users, you aren't quite sure what you're getting. Facebook has a an important kind of power right now, just out of sheer number of users and how they treat scenarios like this. Like, I know they want to see themselves as a tools company, but maybe it would behoove them to have some sort of an editorial team to deal with things like this on a more human level. I know that that kind of puts Zuckerberg in a position that he says he doesn't want to be in based on, you know, his comments in the past, but I don't know. It's almost like Facebook, based on a lot of the features and tools that they've rolled out in the past, have kind of been forced into a position of being, you know, an editorial company, a media company of some sort. And it just needs to treat itself like that so that responsible decisions are made.
Yeah, I mean, they're still posting fake news. Even today, the trending news promoted a fake article about 9/11, you know, in honor of the 15th anniversary, said that the towers were torn down by bombs, not by planes. And a couple of other fake articles have been trending also. So I don't know. I mean, part of me says this can't all be done by an algorithm, but maybe it can. Maybe in the future it's just getting smarter. Maybe, you know, it's like now Facebook knows that is art and we'll treat it as such. You know, maybe at some point we'll be able to enter all of this information into the algorithm. It'll get smarter and then they can use fewer editors. But right now they can't.
Yeah, they're going to have some sort of a way. Like, from what I gathered on this, the response was, this photo won't get filtered again, which tells me, okay, so then they've gone into their system and they've changed the switch on this photo, so to speak, to say this, you know, this combination of zeros and ones is okay. But that isn't to say that something like this won't come up again in the future. You were saying earlier about how, you know, a photo like this is the kind of thing where you see it and you don't want to see it. You want to look away. And I mean, that's part of the reason why I won a Pulitzer Prize. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Because it's such an impactful, powerful photo. Some people might not want to look at it, but it's such a historical, monumental piece of history. So, you know, I wonder if this blunt object is going to be applied in other ways too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you think about, you want to say this is terrible, that this got taken down because it's history, but another way to look at it is that it got put back up pretty quickly. Yeah. Like Facebook is not still saying like, we're going to keep this down. It got put back up. And if you think about what's in all of our hardcover history books that we grew up in, you know, those people are not, like, the people that put together those books, they're not Mark Zuckerberg. They're sometimes just a group of people. And some of the things that are in history books or aren't in history books can be also be very offensive. And it takes a lot longer to change those.
And incorrect.
Incorrect. And so, you know, I guess you could look at it like, look how fast we caught this and made an example of them. So, yeah, I mean, that's the bright side of this, I think.
Yeah, I like that.
GM will recall 4.3 million vehicles because of a software defect that has been linked to one death and three injuries due to airbags not deploying. Electric car website Electrek also reports that the recall comes just days after Pam Fletcher, chief executive engineer at GM, announced that over-the-air programming will be coming out in the next year or so for GM, and it will be available in the upcoming EV, the Chevy Bolt. Fletcher also said that they take cybersecurity very seriously. So far, Tesla is the only car company to offer over-the-air updates, and they will, I guess, be the second. But it is, you know, it is a cybersecurity issue, but also it would be so much easier because these people that have these, they have to go to a dealership now because this is a software defect. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, it's not a hardware defect. So in the future, recalls like this will be a lot easier and presumably safer unless your car gets hacked.
Yeah, I have to imagine this is going to be the case for all cars eventually, and probably pretty quickly. This seems to be the way that things are headed, and rightfully so. It kind of stinks to have to, you know, for all of the owners of these vehicles to have to arrange and you know, to take their cars in for something that's as simple as a software update. Apparently, in this case, it's a diagnostic module. It affected very, very few. Like, it's basically only resulted in a single death and like two or three injuries at this point. But it's a diagnostic module that basically senses how the vehicle is operating and deploys airbag as a result of, you know, what it senses. And this issue is switching it automatically into a test mode, which would prevent the airbag from deploying and which would prevent other things like the seatbelt from tightening in the case of an accident. So pretty serious stuff, but all tied to the software update that if only it could be over the air updated and then everybody would be moving on and not inconvenienced. But
So it's going to affect the Buick LaCrosse, the Chevrolet Corvette, newer models of these cars, Silverado 1500, Chevy Tahoe, Suburban, and Silverado HD, and the Cadillac Escalade, newer models of all those cars.
Yeah, 2014 to 2017 models. At least their batteries aren't exploding.
Mm-hmm. True.
If you were considering picking up a Samsung Galaxy Note 7 smartphone, but you're worried about how to tell the difference between one that will pack productivity versus one that will pack an explosive battery, Samsung has you covered. Those receiving replacement units over the next few weeks, as well as those buying new devices, should find a circular blue S sticker on the box that denotes the inclusion of a safe battery inside. If you don't have the box and you still want to know whether, you know, whether your phone has one of the bad batteries or not, Samsung plans to launch an IMEI database tool sometime in the next week to help users kind of log in and determine how safe their Note 7 is. And I mean, you know, things keep raining down right now, even from yesterday. The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission is now working with Samsung. They're trying to determine, or to basically to levy or issue a formal recall, because I mean, Samsung's issued a recall, but it might get more serious than that. It might be an official formal recall coming from the commission, and also kind of determining if a replacement Note 7 is ample, acceptable remedy to this issue for users that already have one.
So Samsung made a statement about this today, but I went to their website and I did not see anything. So we discussed this yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think probably if you have this phone, you're sort of an early adopter and you probably do follow the tech news. I do think that they need to be more aggressive in, you know, and I guess they have been
information
more
aggressive
about
this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They also said they'd pay you $25 if you replace mm-hmm. the phone with another Samsung phone, so.
Yeah, $25. I mean, it's better than nothing. Sure, that's going to help. But I think the biggest issue right now is awareness, like you said. And if most people have one that don't know that this is even happening, that's a pretty big issue. I mean, even the Federal Aviation Administration, as well as U.S. authorities, Qantas Airlines, Virgin Australia, they're all basically saying, don't put this phone in checked-in luggage. Do not turn it on while you're on the plane. Do not charge it on the plane. I mean, I'm actually kind of expecting at some point the way things are headed for the FAA to basically just say this phone's not allowed. If things get worse, it could escalate to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that deep learning is allowing our devices to get better and better at understanding what we're saying, but wouldn't you also like their voices to get a little more natural sounding, you know, less like Siri and Alexa and more like Hal or Samantha? Well, your wait is almost over. Google's DeepMind has announced WaveNet. That's new AI that mimics a human voice so well that soon we might not be able to tell the difference. Here's how most text-to-speech systems work right now. They either recombine fragments of recorded speech or they generate speech by passing information through a vocoder. But Google researchers created a program that learns from the audio that it's fed and produces raw audio sample by processing at least 16,000 samples per second. Don't worry, the robot overlords have not yet learned to read. You still have to feed them the text. I think we can listen to the difference.
The Blue Lagoon is a 1980 American
that's the old one. That, this is actually
directed by Randall Kleiser.
That's like the old Android version that like a couple of years ago. Go to the next one.
The Blue Lagoon is a 1980 American romance and adventure film directed by Randall Kleiser.
I feel like that's what you have right now, or what we have on Android devices right now. This is WaveNet.
The Blue Lagoon is a 1980 American romance and adventure film directed by Randall Kleiser.
A lot more gliding, a lot more natural kind of transition from the different parts of the words and, you know, the different sounds and everything. Apparently, they're going to work a breath into here, too, because mm-hmm. the samples, you know, they're all taken from actual people speaking. And now they're getting to the point to where they can sample even the breaths that happen in between certain words or sentences at the end of a sentence or whatever. And they can kind of throw that into the model. I love this stuff. I'm so excited for this. For some strange reason, like I've read and seen a lot of videos over the last couple of years about how they do this. I find it fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, blind test say it was 50% more human sounding. I couldn't tell the difference. But you're an audio guy. Could you really tell the difference?
Yes. could absolutely tell the difference between the second example and the third example. It's less between the first and the third example. Absolutely. No question. Like, I feel like that's like the difference between seeing black and white and color. Between the second and the third, it's close, but I can definitely hear the difference. The second one still has a little bit of that like rigid kind of robotic tales, you know, on how the sounds are stitched together. You can kind of hear that a little bit. Of course, my ears are really sensitive to this kind of stuff because I'm not a huge fan of like vocal correction in music. Like there was this long trend of overcorrecting, like you believe in life after love. You know, that song kind of kicked it off. That whole effect that they started to do to really overcorrect voice, and I always felt like I could hear it even when they were doing it subtly. So maybe that's it. But yeah. I definitely hear a big difference.
Yeah, I love that song. You
say. I'm not saying it's a bad song, and they use that effect to good effect, I suppose. If you're a fan of Cher, we were Sonny and Cher just the other day. Yes, I might remind you.
You were Cher without that, processing. I mean,
this is basically, in my eyes, this is basically Deep Dream for audio. And Deep Dream a couple of years ago is where, you know, it kind of revealed how Google's algorithms and AI was taking image recognition and matching patterns, being able to kind of pull different things from one and match it into another and smash it together. When they played on the same thing, they have these music examples, and it's pieces of piano. So they fed it all sorts of different clips of piano, and then the machine, the algorithm, basically put together its own, you know, mini concerto. I mean, they were very small audio pieces, but it's super convincing. Yeah. Like just the way that it learned how to take all these little tiny chunks of piano and combine it together to make this abstract piano piece. It just really goes to show how the lines of creativity in humans and the creativity in robotics and stuff are really blending and merging right now. Mm-hmm. Very cool stuff. Nest has updated its software to include a new feature called Sightline for its Wi-Fi camera lineup. Sightline analyzes all the captured video from one of Nest's cloud-based cameras and surfaces only those moments that might be worth investigating on a timeline inside the newly redesigned Nest app. Nest says this lets users time travel, they say, to points of concern and skip all of the uneventful hours of recorded video. That's the biggest challenge here, right? When you've got surveillance video, you know, video cameras up, they're recording 24 hours a day. How do you know when you go back to it where the right thing is to look at? And this is basically analyzing a scene, understanding that this is what the scene is for the majority of the time that it's taken that video, and then something comes into it that's different, it sees that as an event that's worth noting, and then you can jump right to it and scan through them.
And it's using deep learning also. It's using DeepMind, Google's DeepMind, same thing. Because it wants to tell the difference between like a tree waving and, you know, someone coming to steal your brand new iPhone.
Or drop off a package or whatever. Or somebody comes to drop off a package and then another person comes to steal that package that had an iPhone in it. And I'm very sorry that that happened to you, whoever you are. Very, very cool stuff. Nest also announced that Nest Cam Outdoor Security Camera System, which I think they first unveiled this in June. No, it was July. It's on sale now. They also have some new colors for the Nest thermostat.
Chrome.
Ooh.
Maybe they, matte black.
Yeah, I was going to say, do they have piano black?
Piano black. It's called jet black now.
Oh, okay.
That's jet what black. Apple calls it.
Whatever. Up next, we're going to chat about the social network for the deceased. But first, let's take a minute to thank Grasshopper, the sponsor of this episode. Grasshopper is a virtual phone system designed for entrepreneurs. Grasshopper works just like a traditional phone system, but it actually requires no hardware purchase, no software installation on your part. With their iOS and Android app, callers can reach you wherever you happen to be on your mobile phone. Grasshopper allows you to keep your existing number, which is very nice, so you can maintain your brand. When you make a call, your client will see your Grasshopper caller ID instead of your personal phone number, even though you're making it on the same phone. You simply select a toll-free or local number. Then you'll need to record a custom greeting and add multiple extensions for your business. It all looks totally legit, totally professional. Toll-free numbers are great for marketing, by the way. That can make your business sound even more professional. Set up department and employee extensions. with custom call forwarding to any phone in the world. Get voicemails emailed to you as audio attachments, which makes it easy to preview those after the fact, just kind of in your desktop or on your laptop. You can also send and receive SMS messages from your business number. Join over 250,000 Grasshopper customers today. Plans start at just $12 per month. You have a 30-day money-back guarantee. Turn your smartphone into a business line with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, just go to trygrasshopper.com/twit. That's trygrasshopper.com/twit. And we thank Grasshopper for their support.
We here at Tech News Today make no secret of the fact that we are not sports fans, not really, but we still regularly read The Ringer, which is mostly sports and also a lot of really unique tech reporting by Molly McHugh, Victor Luckerson, and our next guest, Alyssa Bereznak. Welcome, Alyssa.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So one of your headlines caught my eye this week, the Facebook of the dead. It's a deep dive of sorts into the world of legacy.com, the internet's obituary warehouse. First, what made you want to sit down with the CEO of legacy.com?
Well, there's always been a stat sort of floating around on the internet and just a general sort of nagging problem for Facebook, which is that they have a lot of dead people on it. You know, they really did have to create user features that addressed this issue, because it was like before someone would die and then all of a sudden it became this weird middle ground of an obituary page, but like the families, like the deceased person's family couldn't access it or edit it. And so I was just sort of wondering if there was an alternative to that, you know, like what happens when I die and what, like, are my social media accounts all that's left of me? And that's what sort of led me to look into legacy. And it just so happened that they're actually now developing this sort of like incubator, like faux startup over in Calabasas, California, and trying to foster this like high-tech data science focused team to actually sort of create a social network for obituaries, which is incredibly dark.
It is. I mean, it makes you think about, like, you know, looking at all the cemeteries and thinking, gosh, like, when we're going to run out of room. It's sort of the same thing about Facebook. Like, at one point you feel like, wow, there are more, you know, at one point you get to the point in your life where, like, there are more, you have more friends that are alive than not alive. But legacy.com is not, it's not new. It's not a startup. It's been around for a while. Tell us when they got started. And I guess you've already told us a little bit about how they're changing. Is this their first big change?
No, I mean, they've existed since 1998. So clearly they started as just basically a way to move obituaries from newspapers online. And that was sort of like the early internet for everything, right? Like all of a sudden you can read the New York Times online. And then they started partnering with newspapers everywhere and funeral homes. And eventually it just became clear that they could get direct user contributions and also sort of make use of the fact that the internet is public and loved ones who have known the deceased through their whole, like in different parts of their lives, could contribute memories. So they opened in comment sections, and then the way they started making money was through like small, like buy flowers for the family buttons and create a memory book. But then of course, along with the good contributions to a person's obituary came like intense spam. So they've sort of been working on adapting to the internet, just like all the other social networks that are constantly running into problems every day, but it's much less in the spotlight and it's much more regulated, and it's not like a very public feed where journalists are trawling all day long. You know, it's more something that gets traffic from Google Hits when you search a person's name in obituary. But at the same time, it's a really important part of existing today, right? Because your online life is just as important as your tangible interpersonal relationships in your day-to-day life.
Yeah, in many ways, people spend as much time as, you know, as much kind of important time of their waking hours online as they do in their real lives. And so, yeah, there needs to be representation in both areas for that when they're no longer here. So obviously there are visitors to the site that are there specifically to pay respects to someone very specifically, you know, someone they know or someone that, you know, that they are related to, whatever the case may be. But are there casual users of the site? And if so, how the heck does that work? That seems even darker, I suppose.
Yes, actually, there are casual users of the site. And as you might imagine, they're more historians. They're more people whose friends and family members are dying more often, maybe. And so they're older. When I spoke to Steve Parrott, the CEO, he said that they actually have a lot of different user profiles that they sort of cobble together from browser cookies to sort of define different visitors. And so in some cases, it's Rosemary, the grandmother, who likes to browse and who they know to sort of offer small, like LinkedIn-esque features, like, if you read this obituary, you might be interested in this obituary, which is incredibly dark, right? But at the same time, it's helping a user who actually might be interested in clicking on to that next piece of content. And then they have profile user profiles for
people, basically people who are Googling and they know, okay, this is a one and done thing. They're going to pay their respects to the deceased and they don't want any sort of intense like smart suggestions about what else to do on the site. Like they know that it's not a pleasant thing to be visiting the site. So they have to be really careful about that, right? Because you don't want to offend someone who's mourning. They're in a really emotional state in the first place. And speaking to Steve, it really did sound like they had moments where they did offend people.
Well, it's, I mean, you know, every social network wants to get as many people and keep them there as long as possible. So, Right. Yeah, that, I guess they really are in search of those people, you know, the people that go to funerals just to go to funerals, which, well, I guess seems to be those same kinds of people that go to legacy.com.
Yeah, it's an interesting kind of area to be in because designing a social network around death kind of requires a level of restraint, a level of responsibility. I mean, compared to other social networks that are like memes and, you know, and all of your favorite photos from your vacation. Like, I don't know. It's just a different, it's a strange way to think about it, I suppose.
But you say they get pretty creative. I mean, when Prince died, they live streamed his funeral. What are some of the other things they're doing like that?
Yeah. So, when Celine Dion's husband died, they made like a really big effort to be sort of like the sponsored program to create like a very fancy memory book, like leather bound. There were 8 editions of it. And they have sort of like a mourning columnist written by a widow who's sort of like the Dear Abby of death. And now they're sort of looking forward to changing up the obituary pages so they're not just text, but they are multimedia, and this is something that's very much in the future for them. They haven't necessarily accomplished that, but they're working with some prototypes to really like jazz things up and make it so that all of the digital artifacts that people collect of them over the years, you know, like the photos that they had on Facebook that represented a really special time in their life, that they could put that on there as a timeline or something. And of course it's all approved by the family. It's not completely crowdsourced in an uncontrolled way, but at the same time they're looking to make the site more engaging, just as you were saying, like they want to keep people interested and on the pages.
You mentioned spam, but sadly, it appears that even after you're dead, you can't get rid of some trolls. You have a story about an acrostic poem that actually on someone's obituary that actually spelled out the word whore, and it wasn't caught. It was almost not caught, but then it was caught. So I guess they have some technology in place to catch these sort of things. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's a constantly updated algorithm, and they had this way before the Innovation Center. They've had this since like the early 90s, and they've been updating it more and more as the trolls get smarter and smarter and worse and worse. And Now they actually have like a staff of about 100 contractors who work through like a three-tiered system. Like a comment has to be seen by three people. And that's how that really at first seemingly loving poem, but then ultimately horrible poem sort of got through but was finally caught by a person. And I spoke to some of these people and it's intense for them. I mean, they really see a lot of mean, spiteful stuff like written by mistresses and people who want revenge on the dead. It's fascinating. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, Alyssa, thank you so much for joining us to talk about this subject. Alyssa Bereznak is a writer at The Ringer, at Alyssa Bereznak on Twitter. Is there any place else where your work can be found?
Just on the internet.
Thanks so much, Alyssa.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Take care.
Have a good night. Hey, every once in a while, one of our awesome fans calls our voicemail line. Doesn't happen very often, but 260-TNT-SHOW is the number. They leave their comment in their own voice, and this happens to be one of those times. Why don't we take a listen?
Hey, guys. Yesterday, the FCC proposed requiring cable companies to provide free apps to get to their cable TV content. This is a horrible idea. It would be better to say the cable companies should provide APIs or something like that. How many cable TV apps have more than 3-star rating on them? Usually, it's only 1-star. Even the NBC Olympics app had complaints of people like me that the app denied service to or created errors. The cable companies will just make another crappy app and say they did their job. Like the cable cards, they hated to support them. It took them 3 technicians to install a cable card into my TiVo to get it to work. Bring back true support for cable cards and make IPTV cards as well. Anyway, thanks. Love the show.
I love how cable card was like, it's a slot in the machine. You have a card, you just put it in there. But meanwhile, everybody that ever tried to do cable card, that's all they ever said was it was just, you know, constant pushback, lack of information, the most difficult thing in the world. That I completely agree with our caller. And that was kind of my point yesterday is like, I don't know if I trust the cable companies with just making an app to satisfy the requirement. I'm sure there will be many ways along that way, be it intentional and unintentional, that just would be a sucky kind of transition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. After the break, free iPhone 7s, or are they? First, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, the sponsor of this episode. The mortgage process, it is the least exciting part of buying a new house. If you want to get your next mortgage online like you do everything else, you might want to try Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. Fast, powerful, and completely online, Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. With Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and your pay stubs at the touch of a button. That'll help you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. Even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on your phone or on your tablet. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support.
All right, TNT's fan of the day is Hans at Hansen Studios on Twitter, who says he watches TNT every day at work and that he's been watching Twit since the beginning. There we are looking off to his other screen where we're trying to see what he's making in Photoshop, apparently.
That's good. It's apparently more interesting than you, to me.
I don't know what you've got there. I have to imagine it's a logo, or I don't know. I'm very curious to see.
I like it.
But I like what I see, and apparently we do too on the screens. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will hopefully find it someday.
It's iPhone ordering day. Did you order yours yet? I just did right before this show started.
How was it?
Excited. It was quite easy. Okay. The whole process, I was, John was going to do it for me last night, and then there was a mix up, and then I tried to do it this morning. So, it's done. And of course, I've got the October 4th date, which means I'll probably go into the store and buy it on September 16th and cancel that order. But it's fun.
But it's there. Or don't cancel it. And then you can give it to me and
right.
I'll play around with
well,
it.
Well, Leo apparently also got an extra. So we'll just okay. be covered in iPhone 7s. So if you are on the fence, please read the fine print before falling for one of those free iPhone 7 offers from Sprint, Verizon, AT&T's, and others. They're all over the place. But really, they're just another way to saddle you with another two-year contract. And you don't know what you'll want in 2 years. You might be, you know, you might want to switch to Android in 2 years. You don't know. You might want to switch plans. So the phones have probably... you know, in 2 years, they'll be surgically implanted into our brain. So you'll have to really think about whether you want that iPhone surgically implanted into your brain. Also, in these plans, they require you to trade in a pretty new iPhone because they're going to just turn around and sell it to someone else at an outrageous price. So unless you have a 6 or 6S or a Galaxy S7, you're probably out of luck. And if you think about it, the 6S, not even the 6, but the 6S or the Galaxy S7, you were probably paying over $600 for that a year ago. You're turning that in. It's not really free because these new phones are not really that much more than that. So I don't know.
I mean, there's the saying of, you know, nothing in life is actually free. So
yeah, I've fallen for that. I fell for like a free Galaxy Tab, and it was on my plan. Do you remember that?
No, I remember when they were doing that. Actually, my wife got caught up with that too with Verizon through her business, and they were doing a business plan and. Somehow this tablet, the free tablet, but of course it has a data plan. Mm-hmm. And she only realized like months later, like, wait a minute, extra data plan. Oh, that tablet that we never ever used that we thought was free. They get you somehow, you know?
You know, pro tip, when I fell for that tablet, I had brought my children with me and they're running around touching everything. Can I have this? And they're loud. And that's when you can't make a decision. So if you're going to a store, go alone. You know, maybe take some anti-anxiety medicine before you go. Just be in a relaxed state however you get there so that you can be clear at what they're asking you and telling you what is free and what is not. Just do that.
Probably really good tip there. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. You'll leave us a short voicemail with your voice. Like we had earlier on the show, 260-TNT-SHOW, and we'll play it on the show. And you can find us on Twitter. We're at TechNewsTodayTV.
And find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And you know where you can find me on Twitter, at Megan Maroney. And speaking of Twitter, my Amazon Echo will now read my tweets.
Oh.
So tweet at me so that I can have things to listen to always, even as I'm drifting off to sleep.
Does it do it automatically without you requesting it?
Not yet, but I hope that's coming soon. I just want Alexa to just start reading Twitter.
Oh, man, that sounds noisy.
It's horrible because I keep my phone out of the bedroom for that reason so I can get away from Twitter, and now I can't.
I have set Twitter to only refresh when I open the app now because I don't want to be notified all the time by it. So that sounds like my worst nightmare, having it read it all the time. But I love you, Twitter. I'm on Twitter, at Jason Howell, so you can find me there, and I'll get back to you when I actually open the app and read it. Thanks to our technical director, Kara Cole. Thanks to Mario for the words on the screen. Thanks to Kevin for editing and making us look good. Thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Monday.
Monday.